Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have with me the gorgeous Melanie Greenhow. Now, she is a mother, a community worker, an entrepreneur, public speaker, Amazon best-selling author, and she's not afraid to speak on issues that are taboo, confronting, and uncomfortable, hence why we're going to get on fabulously through this interview. She speaks on issues such as loss and grief and mental health and well-being, and growth that follows struggle, and how we can find our way back from surviving to thriving. She is the real deal because she has survived her very own decade of disaster, which we're going to hear a little bit about that, I'm sure. Her speaking and media appearances include her signature TEDx talk, Let's Rethink Our Approach to Grief and Loss. Welcome, Melanie. I am so looking forward to our conversation today.
So am I. Thanks for having me, Janine. It's a real honour. Thank you.
Oh, you are most welcome. The part of, you know, that whole surviving to thriving, and I was at an event this morning and we were talking to, you know, some of the people there, and there's often little things going on that people don't realise and that don't seem like a big drama, but there's little things in their life which end up being a trauma because they hold back their words or they aren't, and they have permitted to speak. Or do you find that?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I love that you've opened up with that because so often people will want to talk about the decade of disaster, which I'm sure we'll get to, but underlying all of that is it's the exact reason that I sort of came to the work that I do. What I got from all of that was this understanding that, one, it's all relative. What can feel very small and insignificant to me may be very, you know, big and cause a really large rupture in your life for you. Yeah. But what we don't talk about enough is the fact that underlying a lot of what really causes us pain, discomfort, and also to get stuck is our experiences of the little losses, yeah, the losses in our lives. Because when automatically with language, when we use the word loss, it's associated with grief, and yes, they do go together. However, the background association with that is around death and dying. And it's about so much more than that. It is deeper. You know, it is much more broad than that. It's a, you know, examples that a lot of the women that I work with, they'll come and, you know, we'll be talking about something. And ultimately it always comes back to this moment where, you know, we go back to the past with consent. We have a look at some of the things that are going on. And it's a loss that they've experienced. It might be the relationship that they thought was going to last forever, including friendships, particularly for women. The ruptures we can experience when we lose a relationship in our lives can have really big ongoing kind of implications. But it might be about the dream that we thought, you know, the dream career we thought we were going to have that didn't pan out. It might be about the family that we thought we were going to create that we didn't. It could be about having a child or a relative who has acquired or was born with a disability that you're now having to navigate your life in a different way than you potentially dreamed about.
I'm getting that sense, you know, that, and all of those examples are real. They're things that are happening in everyday life. And I just have to repeat a story, and I think I may have shared it on previous posts. I was working as a general manager of sales for a multi-million dollar company. I'd been there for 20 years and working, building my business on the side. We got a new operations manager and I had to make a decision whether I would continue working there and in a business that I love with people that I respected or not. It just wasn't worth it. And I think the universe came into play and said, okay, let's get you out of here, girl, and go do what you love to do, which was, and I paid attention to it. And that happened in the June, and I was very busy sort of building the business. But in the November, I got into a real funk for a couple of weeks. And it was, when I stood back and looked, it was the loss of what I had, who I was in that workplace, the people I'd been working with. And once I realized, oh, that's what it is, that's fine. I was able to accept it and move on. And only because I'm fairly observant to what things are going on. And it was only a couple of weeks. But I can imagine how that sits with people, because it felt really shitty, actually. It was a horrible feeling.
And that's right. And it was a grieving process around, yeah. And you talk about that, the connection to identity. So, you know, we really, and I love that you said, you know, yep, for me, I was able to kind of process that through. You had the emotional intelligence, you had the reflective skills, you were able to ask yourself some of those existential questions, right? Because 20 years is a really big chunk of your life, let alone your working career, right?
Yeah.
And suddenly you're like, hang on, what did that all mean? What was my contribution? Am I that easily replaceable? And it's not that you've got, you know, like, of course, we all need to have a certain amount of tickets on ourselves, Janine, right? In order to, you know, to
definitely
kind of, to get on with life. But the thing is too that, you know, like you say, it was a big organization and ultimately, you know, it's a transactional experience. Yeah.
Well, one person can change the whole experience.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, being able to take that time and what I do love about that story that you've told is that what people don't understand is that it's often the loss we experience will happen. The grief that follows is not always immediate.
No, and again, it was months.
Correct. And it comes back to that idea that we associate loss with death and dying.
Yeah.
And it's the immediacy of that. It's the finality of that. And so then we take that concept and those ideas and we go, oh, well, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with me because I left my job months ago or, you know, suddenly it's 3 years down the track and, you know, I've moved on. But then all of a sudden, you know, your body actually sort of holds it on a cellular level, right? And it comes back like a big old tsunami. And, you know, sometimes it can really knock you off your feet. And you're, when somebody doesn't necessarily have the skills or the tools, you know, that's where they can get really lost in their own life and they can get really stuck.
Oh, I could imagine, because it was just not, it was not a great place to be in. And it did surprise me that it took so long, you know, and I was working with clients, I was doing all of the things that I'm passionate about, love to do. And hence when it hit, I went, what is this about? I'm doing what I love. But, yeah. And that really sense of identity was definitely a part of it, because here I am, you know, dealing with the big boys, you know, top end of town all the time and you know, do that. But, yes, yeah.
Yeah, and just that, you know, the thing is that all of these things aren't insurmountable in any way. You're able to navigate them by processing them through and, you know, coming to some level of understanding it. And again, you know, your example is a couple of weeks. You know, I'm going to be really honest with everyone today and say, you know, when I talk about the decade of disaster and there was a cumulative effect of a range of different losses, which was, you know, that was the gift I was given, right? That they were all slightly different. But, you know, I'm going to say to you that there are still parts of that journey that I absolutely know I have in the backpack and I have not unpacked yet, you know, because I'm not there yet. But it was intense. So
And bringing that up, so sharing some of the things I
Yeah,
remember.
look, yeah, the decade of disaster was I mean, I package it up like that so that I'm
I
able
love
to.
alliteration, and it
I
makes it sound, oh, there it is, a decade of disaster. So
know,
I'm
right?
sure it didn't feel like that in the
No, it
process,
didn't.
Melanie.
It didn't, and it's really a coping mechanism for me to be able to wrap it up and to be able to talk about it, now with more emotional ease. But ultimately, my mother passed away in 2009, and it was a long illness, and I was her carer and support. She was 54, and I was devastated. Single mum, raising me and my siblings. And then 6 months later, my 24-year-old sister passed away, and she left behind two children. And she was in an unhealthy relationship. And so I grabbed them up and held them close. And they're now my sons. My husband and I have raised them and, feel very lucky to be able to have been in the position to do that and to make that choice. And there was a lot of, you talk about the little things behind the scenes, but there was what we call in the ACT care and protection services. So, there was state intervention in our lives, and that was really confronting for us because we were independent family doing our own thing, and for me, having worked in that industry, I just felt so violated by that. And that was a 10-year process to be able
Wow.
to permanently have the children in our care. And then in 2016, I got a
Just on
terrible
that,
phone.
anyone can have children.
Yeah.
Can birth them, so here we are. I'm a
Yeah.
good parent.
I know it. Yeah, it was full on, and I found that really I found it traumatic. That it was really and it did a lot of damage actually, which I've had to work on. But in 2016, I got a call from a complete stranger who had three of my four children on the side of the road and told me that my house was burning to the ground,
Oh my goodness.
and yeah, we lost everything. And the kids were okay. It was one of those sliding doors moments where I'd left them for a small amount of time, and my husband was coming home, and but they were all okay, and they did really well. They were little heroes. They held each other and made really good decisions and kept themselves safe, which was great. And along the way, of course, there was always this idea that it could have been worse. But that doesn't sustain you on a day-to-day basis. That's the one you go to when you're down at the bottom of the ocean and you've touched the bottom and you're thinking, I've got to look for the light here, people.
And I'm going to make light of that.
Yeah.
We've got a heat wave here in Queensland at the moment. I played golf and walked for 4.5 hours the other day, coming up the 18th hole, struggling and dragging myself. Feet were aching. I'd run out of water, and I look up on the roof, and there's a person putting solar panels on the roof of the clubhouse. And I've got nothing. I'm out here. I choose to be out here.
Yeah,
But that's
this
what
is my
you
recreation
sort of could
time.
say, okay, there's other people worse off, and we often say that, but we say it in a light way, still not recognizing that I am really hot still, and it was, and that's nothing compared to what a lot of people
But it's,
brush aside.
yeah.
And my sister brushes things aside really easily, but then suffers with one physical ailment and even a broken heart, a heart from brushing things aside and saying, well, it could be worse, and it's not owning it. So I hear you. It's because that's what
And
you tried. How was your health then with all of that going on?
what a segue, Janine. Because in so we're living in this rental while we're rebuilding a house as quickly as we possibly could, to I suppose house our children and try to keep them stable and safe. But I went to the doctor for a sore finger, and I I think four, 3.5 weeks later, I was on the table having a radical hysterectomy after a endometrial cancer diagnosis.
There you go. What?
Yeah. So, you know,
Goodness.
when I say stress is an illness, and you know, and I really try to convey this to a lot of women because we live with these stresses. We're carers, we're nurturers, we're organizers, we're the coordinators, we're the collaborators. You know, they are gifts. They're absolutely gifts. I actually wouldn't want it any other way. But with that, you know, comes a responsibility for ourselves to, you know, manage those stresses. And look, I wasn't, and I really do believe that, you know, I manifested that illness through the stresses I was under at the time. But it was just wild. It was wild.
That
And each of
is
those.
really great. That's, and there's nothing, I'm very much of the, where we, the universe gives us little nudges, and then if we don't pay attention, they'll make the nudge a bit bigger and the nudge a bit bigger and the nudge a bit bigger until you have no option than
Correct.
to pay attention. So I'm sort of very much, oh, thank you, I got that. I'm going to look at what that means. That, but it's, I'm seeing so much different things with what was going on in your life that it probably you weren't in a place where you could go, oh, because this is what happens. Not many people are in that place thinking, oh, I wonder why this is happening and how am I going to do this? Oh, I won't stress about it. I'll be, you know, yeah. And that's not what people can do in when they're being held with their head underwater. I mean, that's just what it feels like when you're telling me these stories. Goodness me.
It's very true. And I think that actually the question that really came to my mind was, why am I being punished? That was actually the question that came. So, you know, and you know, I hear this a lot with the women I'm working with, and I'm like, I get it. I get that naturally that's the question that the brain brings forward, you know, that says you've done something wrong. You know, and then you've got people that, you know, are walking around mentioning karma, and you're thinking, oh my Lord, what does this mean? You know, so but I think what was really instrumental for me in that way that you've just described, that moment of, you know, having to go to Sydney, being away from my children, being away from my husband. You know, I navigated all of that on my own because, you know, there is four kids and there's only two of us. And, you know, my husband and I run another business as well. And so it was just frantic. But what I really understood from that was the message. And I, you know, just knew that I had to stand up and really fundamentally get back in control, because I was living in autopilot. I was reacting on a daily basis. I had completely lost my way in terms of my own self. And while it was really, I was so grateful that I had a family and children who were relying on me, because I definitely borrowed that and leaned on that, you know. So I had to get up. I had to get up. I had to make the breakfast. I had to get the kids in the uniforms. I had to get them to school. You know, all of those things. And that was definitely a scaffold that I was very pleased was wrapped around me at the time. But, you know, then there comes this moment where you're like, well, you know, I don't want to go anywhere. I want to be a part of this life, and that I do have meaning and purpose. And, you know, reclaiming that space was really important for me.
And that's such a, for women to be, we can step into that space as you did, you know, because it's not something that, oh, well, if I go do this, I won't think about this, but it puts you in a place where you're doing something nurturing and caring and the gifting out, isn't it? That then, as you said, that became your scaffold of doing that without, because it's a choice you're doing that, not someone's taking that from you, which is a different, very different space to be in.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, when we talked before about the shifting from surviving to thriving, and it's really interesting because for quite a long time there, I wasn't acknowledging that I was definitely probably living in one foot in the victim camp and one foot in the survivor camp. And in the work I've done with victim survivors, so I've done a lot of work in domestic and family violence and sexual assault and sexual harassment. And you know, it's very obviously there's a continuum, yeah. And people will often, you know, it's like an abacus. You can slide up and down on that scale, just dependent on what's going on. And because of the intensity, there was definitely that sliding for me. And what's really interesting, around sort of 2017, not long after I did the TEDx talk, that's when I really started to step into back towards thriving. And it's been a journey. You know, it's not a 30-day radical challenge
No.
where you suddenly get a six-pack of emotional abs, you know. It takes time, but absolutely now I'm able to really claim that yes, I'm a survivor, and I'm really proud of the fact that I was able to touch the bottom
Yep.
and, you know, come back up
You back up. Yeah.
through the waves, look for the sun, go for the surface. And so I claim that as a part of my identity, but now, you know, I'm absolutely just all about thriving in myself and you know, working with women to bring them back to that.
Yeah, and that's it's such a different space, mindset, physical, energy. It feels completely different when you're just sort of trying to get through every day, as opposed to, you know, waking up and going, oh, this is going to be an awesome day, and what's going to happen that'll, you know, bring me opportunity, whatever that
Well,
looks
and
like.
that's right. And of course, you do, you know, acknowledging the, I suppose, the journey is also about an inner sense of confidence. You know, it's that internal connection to myself that says, well, you know what? I've faced adversity. You know, if I can get through the decade of disaster, you know, the human experience means difficult things are going to come into my life again.
Yeah.
That's just what it is. Life is 50-50. Yeah. It's there's the light and the shadow. But I've got a lot more, you know, I suppose a deeper sense of connection with the fact that, you know, regardless, I'll figure it out.
Yeah. So how did you know, go from that space with that happening? You know, you said you sort of wrapped yourself up in the family and the responsibility there, but what, you know, I'm imagining the work you did is what you do now with other people, but finding that yourself and going, I need to go find it, is, you know, that's the spot sometimes people can't be in either, going, I need to find something that's going to change the way I am and the way I'm doing things and responding to things.
Yeah, there's three elements to it. One is that I'd been doing that work with people my whole career, but I had never found myself in that position where, you know, I was working with people when they were literally having their worst day.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you know, I experienced that several times over with the variety of losses, some anticipated, some not. And then so I was able to really connect to that, all of that work on a personal level. I sort of had to become, you know, my own worker, my own support worker. But interestingly, where the connections and things really changed for me was when I went and started doing the research in the neuroscience field. So for my sister's eldest, who really struggled, he'd experienced and was exposed to a lot of violence. And so he definitely had impact from that trauma on his brain. So I went looking at, you know, how could I support and really help him through that? And it ended up just opening up my mind to, okay, how am I going to manage, myself? And I was able to really use, a lot of brain hacks. I do a lot of brain hacking, so I'd be like, oh, I think I need a dopamine hit. What does that look like? How do I do that? And really understanding the role of the primitive brain. So, or what I, the downstairs brain. So this executive functioning up here is our upstairs brain, and it's great, but then when we get frightened, we experience, some sort of risk assessment that says, oh, this might not go the way that, we want it to go. Our primitive brain will drag us back into the cave and says, sit by the fire on this warm bearskin rug. I got you. I got you, sister. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, that's it. That feels a lot better than going
Right.
into something scary.
It's like you can see outside of the cave, you can see that the sun is shining, but your brain, as it's a wonderful, wonderful supercomputer, but it's also actually pretty stupid, and it'll hold you back. It'll, and it'll say, don't go out there. Something bad might happen. And in the past, I'd lived with that. I'd had a really difficult relationship with myself. There was a lot of nastiness. There was a lot of put downs, the self-deprecating conversations. And once I started to really understand what the brain was doing and why, I was able to just really turn that around to develop a more calm and caring and compassionate relationship with myself. And it's just,
And that's so important to do that, to nurture ourselves. That's one of the things we talk about, and a lot of the things I do is that you are your priority and everyone else is second to you. Because that way, if you are abundant in wellness physically and mentally, you are abundant financially, and you can support other people. But if you are
Absolutely.
making decisions based on lack, then you're not able to make good decisions for yourself, and then that'll come back to it. And that's where a lot of people sit, don't they? In that making those decisions from a place of lack within themselves. So lack of self-belief, lack of confidence, lack of recognition of who they are and how much they have to offer, and not knowing that.
And it's really interesting because when you look at that and you sort of put it in front of people and you're talking about the lack of, and then you explain to them that, external validation as an example, because it's what we seek when we have lack internally and our own internal validation is light on, we look outside of ourselves. And I talk to people about how you can think of that external validation, whether it's, the socials or even your friends, your family, but it's actually a very thin fuel and it burns up really quickly and it leaves you like incredibly thirsty for more. And so that's what you end up pursuing. You're on this constant cycle of trying to refill from an external source. When in actual fact, if you think about that self-worth that you've talked about and picked up on, it's a much thicker fuel and it burns slower. And in actual fact, the benefit of that is that while you're using it and you're burning it up, you can be replenishing it. You can be refilling along the way, because it's got more substance.
I love the analogy. When I'm doing my sales training, I'm always saying to people, what does it look like? When someone is explained, and you explain that so beautifully, because that's very visual for filling that tank. Now, that's just something's just popped into my mind then. The five love languages. Yes. So what my secondary, now depending where we are at particular time, one of them is, for me, is words of affirmation. But I get them a lot from clients and people, but I don't need them. It's really interesting. I hadn't realized it, but I just fill that up myself. So it's really lovely when you, and I was at this event this morning, and this woman just said to me after she, the difference between doing my course and when she started to, she finished, she said, I started with a can't do attitude and I finished with a can do. And it was just, oh my God, it was
I know, right?
Really, really lovely. So that's lovely to hear.
Yep.
But I hadn't really dawned on me that even though I know it's words of affirmation, it's me.
I was going to say to you, isn't it interesting how the power of the associations that we have within language,
yeah,
they dictate what we take from the message we receive. And so when, as soon as you say, oh, you know, my, one of my love, you know, my big, well, higher love languages is words of affirmation. I'm like, yeah, yeah. But you're obviously giving that to yourself, Janine.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't realized that, you know, it's not that I walk around going, oh my God, you're amazing. What is that? You know, instead of looking in the mirror and going, oh, the hair's out of place. No, that's all right. It'll do. Yeah. It's fine. You know?
And it's that thing that, you know, I think I mentioned earlier, you kind of do have to have a certain amount of tickets on yourself. So, you know, one of the things that happens in our family is that, you know, we've got some pretty confident kids amongst our lot, and, you know, we'll bring them down a peg or two just to keep them human. And they'll always turn around and quote back my husband and I, and they'll say, well, who taught us that if you don't love yourself, no one else can? And I'm like,
It's so important, isn't it? You know, yeah. I've got a few grandchildren, and two of them particularly that I've had a lot of contact with, you know, we're in the pool when they're very young, and they're both gorgeous looking kids. Now, that's not just grandma saying that. That's just, yeah. They are. But it's me, you know, saying, oh, how courageous you are, or, you know, how you think that you are, believe in yourself, all these sort of things, not saying how cute you are or how clever you are or that sort of thing. It's that the courage is more important, you know, having curiosity, being those things for me are of such high value. And it's just something that little game we used to play when they were little, God, and they'd repeat after me, you know, I am courageous, and things like that. It was very, very cute, but it has impact. It absolutely.
Oh, I was going to say to you, yeah, that it is absolutely, you know, I love that you're talking about it in those formative years. So we know that those first 5 to 7 years are so critical. And you're right. It's that we don't want to take it to the point where, you know, I suppose people have an overinflated sense of ego and it's based on their appearance as an example.
Oh, I met them.
But it's, yeah, that's, they walk amongst us, don't they?
They do.
But it's about that fact that, you know, we're really going, you as a person, you are enough. Yeah. And the part of the human growth and development is that you do want, you know, you use skills like curiosity. You have to, in order to establish boundaries in relationships, you have to be courageous. You have to be able to say no. Yeah. And, you know, these are the conversations. So when you're beginning to bring the power of that language into their world, then the ongoing conversations throughout the rest of their life is you start to unpack that. You start to explore it. And that's really important because life is never one lesson. Yeah. Lifelong learning is a continual conversation and, you know, an expansion. Because what I, you know, and it's not a criticism, but what I thought I knew when I was 22, you know, and I still very much, I'm connected to a lot of those things. Some things I've left behind, but a lot of it I've taken forward with me, but it's deeper, it's richer. And I've really tuned in and brought more of it into my life.
And that's a beauty of getting more mature and having more years to experience things and figure out how to deal with it. And fortunately, a lot of the opportunities for people like yourself that I speak to on podcasts or work with are in a space where they are doing that and looking for that growth and opportunity. But there's so many people out there that they have repeated the same stories over and over and over again, and that story has become embedded in their DNA that they can't recognize it's a story.
Absolutely. And then they're really, you know, the it's that very simple model of the narrative, the script, whatever you want to call it, that you write for yourself, yeah, becomes that thought, and then that influences what you do and how you are in the world. And you're absolutely right. You know, I've got a few clients or had over the last couple of years who have really been impacted by extreme trauma. And what's a really important message is that even if you've had those types of ruptures, it's actually never too late to be able to engage with it and rewrite that script. Because, you know, sometimes it's scripts that have been written for us. Sometimes we write them for ourselves. And interestingly, the other thing that happens is that we write them for other people.
Oh, yes, look at
And when
that.
and when you know, you really sometimes it does get greater as you get later. And sometimes the first opportunity that the women that I work with have had to actually unpack that is in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. Because they've actually found air and space and opportunity. And I really do put that message out there that if you, like you mentioned before about the universe gives you the nudge, yeah, if that is something that's been sitting in the back of your mind or in the base of your stomach, and you think, I just think I want to do tomorrow differently, tune into it. And you don't have to do it alone. Like when you look at some of the, you know, there's a variety of services, and whether it's a coach or a course or a program or watching, you know, TED Talks as an example, there are really big, you know, there are big opportunities to unlock, you know, what's been causing you pain.
Yeah, most definitely, and it's a choice. It's a sort of an awakening. On the TED
It
Talks, great segue. The to do a TEDx talk and to, you know, let's rethink our approach to grief and loss. That's, you know, what we've been talking about. But how did that feel? How did you get onto that, and how did that go?
So I was approached. They advertised they were doing a pitch night, and I'd not long, I was in recovery from the operation actually, and I was laying on the lounge, and someone sent me a text and said, "You have to do this. You have to go and pitch your story." And, you know, at the time, I was really being impacted by, you know, toxic positivity. You know, the fact that I just felt really sort of, I suppose, low at the time, and I didn't want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, and I to overcome my grief, and you know, I was all a bit wrapped up in it, and but I thought, yeah, like let's talk about this, let's unpack it, because it's just so the narrative around grief is just so one-dimensional. So I went, I pitched, they loved it. And then it was 6 months of preparation and crafting the story and really kind of understanding what was the idea that I wanted to get across to the audience. And it was instrumental in me rediscovering my identity and who I was. And,
It's
you know,
awesome. Yeah.
yeah, it was great.
And again, it's that I'm going to get out of my cave, I'm going to get out from underneath my blanket, and I'm going to walk outside and look for that opportunity because it's out there. It could be scary. It's definitely be scary, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, and it was, but I was really driven by the idea that, you know, I mean, there's such power in storytelling, right? And it's always been a massive part of my practice as a community worker and working with humans. And interestingly, I was always collecting my clients' stories, and whether that was, you know, talking to a government inquiry or, you know, using those vignettes to get funding to provide them with a program and a service that they needed. And I was like, uh-oh, I think I have the story this time.
Absolutely.
And, but of course, you know, what And it's true, Janine, that underneath that was a whole big set of doubts, which was like, what makes you special? Why would your story be interesting to people? Is your idea kind of worth it? And I must admit, that moment when I was delivering and the energy, the connection between the audience and myself, I mean, it's a place I often will go back to when I need a little energy hit, because it was just electric. And I remember going to the lunch break and just being inundated with people who said, "Now I get it. Now I understand why my father reacted the way he did when my mum passed away. Now I get it. When I'm a nurse and I'm around this all the time, and the way I sort of just get up and get on with it and maybe not acknowledge it for what it really is, that was immensely powerful for me." And there was just story after story. It was great.
And that's the benefit of having a voice then and being able to deliver it in a form like that, because you've impacted the people in the room, but it's not just the people in the room.
No.
You've impacted the people that they're connected with and the lives that they are responsible for as well.
And to be honest with you, I mean, obviously it's on YouTube, and I don't know, on average, maybe 10 emails a year to say, "Hey, I watched that, and this was just so important for me." And that just, I can often get a little email and I'll just go and have a little cry, because it's that's an immense privilege. Oh, like you say, to have voice and to have been given the opportunity, it blows me away.
No, most definitely. And when we're talking about that self-doubt, that often comes back to that sense of shame within ourselves or guilt. I mean, I know us women are very good at this guilt space. The word should be eliminated.
I
I mean, that's what I
know.
say, people should all owe themselves.
Yep.
I remind my husband when he's, oh, I should go and make this phone call. When his dad was with us, he just had to mention, he didn't want to see him. It was a thing, with an adult male son watching his father, and his sisters would get on his case a bit and say, you've got to do this. And so he would be, I should go do this. And it just wasn't not pleasant, but it's that should, isn't it? It's that sense of responsibility and guilt if you don't. So what responsibility is fine, but guilt when you don't do it is wrong.
Absolutely. And it's the cycles that I see women get really stuck in, they get into a sort of a goofy loop, is absolutely in the guilt, shame, and blame. And it actually has just become a part of their dialogue, that they're just like, "Oh, well, it's definitely true. I'm a bad mom," because I don't know what, they had eggs on toast for dinner. I don't know, but it's just like, it doesn't matter, what's going on. It's almost, it just becomes a part of our being. And it's about really understanding the damage that that's doing, and also where it's coming from. And so realistically, a lot of the guilt we experience is, it comes back to those scripts. But, and particularly some of our experiences in childhood. How do we navigate that by really calling it out for what it is? So it's the first part of that process is absolutely, and it sounds so basic because everybody talks about, oh, awareness, but it's about actually catching it, and then checking it and challenging it. And once you start to do that, you're able to go, ah, no, moving on. And I mean, when you talk about the shoulds of, I should do a visit, and understanding that it's painful, And it's about those questions that come back to you, which is, that description of dementia, I mean, that is an anticipatory, you actually lose that person so many times in that journey, from the beginning right to the end. And it so you know there's a lot of there's a lot of gr ongoing grief with that along the way. But it comes back to those, the shoulds are about checking them by sort of saying, what's the regret? If I do this, what's the benefit? If I don't do it, does it cause me regret? Because yeah, that's the part that you I suppose you can't undo that. If you, if you really want to do something, and it's your brain holding you back, it's your brain pulling you back into the cave, that's your opportunity to sort of check and challenge it. And then and it's about putting yourself back in the driver's seat and making decisions for you, not for others.
No, and again, because when you make the decisions for you, you're making a decision from a place of strength, abundance, as opposed to a place of guilt and lack. And one of the other things, and I know in the notes you sent me, talking about, oh, just think positively. Go on, you're fine.
Oh, well, I think I said it's a line from my TED talk, actually, about TEDx talk about oh my God, the amount of people that used to say, like, turn your smile up, turn your frown upside down. And I was just like,
Not today, thank you.
yeah. And if I'm really honest with you, at one point, and I share this because I want people to really understand the depths of that grief that I was in. But I remember I was working in a government department in Canberra, and I had heard and read that if you put a pen in your mouth and it pushed your mouth into the position of a smile, and that this was a way to be able to shift your mood and to, trick your brain,
I've
essentially,
heard
right?
that. I read that too.
Yeah. So there I am. I've done the kid thing in the morning, and then I'm driving into town because we live on a farm, and I am driving along with this pen in my
For those that are listening, not visual, I've just stuck a pen across my mouth and smiling.
And to my dismay, it didn't work, because but it's there's so much in all of that, where you just have to feel your emotions through. Sometimes you absolutely we plaster on the smile, and we all wear masks, and that's essential. That's part of, humans getting on with one another, and particularly workplace civility, that's what I call it now.
Yes, okay, that works.
I don't have to like you, but I have to work with you. So but there's yeah, you also just have to honor that you're going through some stuff, and that you need to do the work on that.
And be
And
kind to yourself.
oh
Just be kind. If you're
yeah.
kind to other people, be kind to yourself.
Yep. It's and again, it sounds so simple, but people really struggle with it. And I did too. I was all about the trying to find the quick fix, the radical, I mean that, the pen in the mouth. I thought, oh, if I do that,
That'll fix it.
that'll fix me. That'll fix me. And it's not about fixing. It is literally about, living it through, feeling it through, and allowing yourself to honor it, along the way. I mean, one of the things that really drove a lot of my feeling stuck in the goofy loop of grief was I for a long time I thought, well, if I'm not demonstrating to the world how much this is hurting me and how much it's rocked me, what does that say about my relationship with my mum and my sister? Oh, isn't that a slippery slope? And down I went into that. And really interestingly now, of course, having raised my sister's two children, I felt a lot of pressure. I felt a lot of pressure to get it right. And you know,
Knowing
now
that you can only do the best you can do.
well, that's
The
right, with
best
the tools you've
is
got.
all we can ever do.
That's
We wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to do my best today. Well, the
It
tools
can
we've
happen.
got, the information we've got, everything that it,
Yeah,
and
that's
that's
right.
a great realization, especially if you're dealing with parents or kids or something. Everyone's doing the best they can.
Oh, there's no manuals, and you got, you know, you've just got to give yourself a break. And certainly when I did the work and I really understood what was happening and was able to just recognize, actually, yeah, you're doing a pretty good job.
Yeah,
You know,
that's
even
awesome.
if they did,
Oh, I'm
you
sure you were.
know.
I can't imagine all of that stuff coming at
Oh.
me. We talk about three takeaways when we get to this stage, Melanie.
Yes.
Things that we really definitely want people to take away, apply. Oh, except I've got to ask, a dopamine hack. You mentioned that early on. Just
Yeah,
explain
yeah.
it to somebody what a quick dopamine hack might be.
Well, a quick dopamine hack is you tuning into what works for you. So if you ask yourself the question, what is it that I do in my daily life that, you know, really makes me feel better? So for some people, it's absolutely going out and picking up a piece of nature and seeing that wonder, understanding it. For some people, it could be, you know, putting moisturizer on their hands. For some people, it is literally like, actually, for everybody, a really quick dopamine hit is to breathe.
Oh, that's handy.
And I don't mean in that way that's, you know, like we're surviving and we're gonna, our lungs are filling. That just that moment, just closing your eyes, really bringing it in through your nose, feeling where the air goes, letting it fill your lungs and into your tummy, and then letting it come out of your mouth. You know,
Yeah.
three of those gives you an instant dopamine
Excellent. No,
hit.
that's a, I kept meaning to come back to that. The three things that we want people to take away before we finish.
Sorry about that. Oh, look, for me, one of the things that I wanted to mention with the takeaways was this idea, and we've been talking about women and how they're living their lives out, and it didn't sort of come up naturally in the conversation, but I do want to mention it. It's that idea of success exhaustion. So, and I know in listening to your previous guests and a few other different podcasts along the way, there's actually a lot of women who will, you know, on paper, we can write down and look at them and go, yes, wow, so successful. But they're absolutely exhausted. And when you get into that and you start to unpack it, it's that the why, they're not connected to the why. Yeah. So they're doing the how. They've got the will, you know, they've got the way, but they're not connected with the will. And so, you know, what they're doing is they're just living in autopilot. And it, you know, for me as an example, you know, and I know you've been able to talk about that too, Janine, but coming in, whether it's your own business or a career change or a job change, whatever it may be, a relationship change. We can be successful in look successful in relationships, but be really exhausted.
Yeah,
You know,
they're not as easy as what people think.
no,
That's
not,
what
not at
no.
all. Exactly. And but you know, what does it look like for you to find your way towards alignment? So that was something that I think is a real theme that comes out in the work that I do. And I mention it because, you know, there's a good set, you know, there's a real set of questions there
Yeah.
to help you sort of understand, okay, I am successful. I was very successful in my leadership roles and all of that sort of thing, but I was exhausted and eventually sort of burnt out.
Okay, so that's one,
And
success exhaustion.
the other one is the idea of, you know, really exploring. I encourage people to explore the anatomy of their emotions. So go and get a bit of an understanding of what's happening with those neurotransmitters, the dopamine. When we're talking about the losses and those and the stress hormone of cortisol, cortisol is a really interesting beast because, unlike things like adrenaline, where adrenaline will spike and your endorphins and even your dopamine will spike and then they will return back to a baseline, cortisol is one where it gets released when we're in high stress situations. And unfortunately, eventually it sort of runs out and it just stops being released. But it also leaves you in a really high state of hypervigilance and you never kind of come back to baseline. It's a really funny interaction. And when we talked about the very first point you made about these little losses and the ruptures that people experience, often what they have no idea is happening is that they are living with these really big cortisol spikes. So, understanding the anatomy of your emotions, because for women, we live with hormones all the time, right? And I've just said to you, well, there's this whole other set that are, interacting. And they're actually the ones that we can, our pituitary gland, as an example, it's constantly working every day for women. But the others are they're a little bit more stable, and you're able to they're the ones you're able to hack a little bit more. So, if it's something that interests you, absolutely pursue it and have a look at the neuroscience and the cognitive and behavioral neuroscience in your
Oh, that
life.
looks like that's such an expansive topic. We could talk
I know.
on that alone for so long. Melanie, if people want to work with you, get in touch with you, how will they do that?
So I have a website which is just collectivewisdomcoaching.com. And I am on all the socials under that title too, with Collective Wisdom Coaching and Consulting. And look, I work remote, virtually in person. I've got some online products, and we'll actually be releasing a new 6-month really deep immersion, which I'm super excited about. Just, because it's all about that slow, deep change, that we're not going to do it in a month. Yeah. So,
No, that's something.
no. Yeah.
Absolutely. Look, I have enjoyed our conversation. I've learned so much from you, and it just is, every time you talk, you talk to people like yourself or people that are just going through things, it really opens up your eyes to how people are dealing with things in a different way. And I think it's just stepping back and recognizing that, we all experience loss in a different way. And as we said right at the beginning, that it doesn't have to be as significant as your disaster, decade of disaster, but it can be, have that same effect down the track. And we want to keep ourselves well and have no dis-ease in our bodies. And removing stress is a great way to start doing that.
Beautiful.
Thank
It
you
was
so much.
fantastic, Janine.
Yeah, thank you so much. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. I'm so glad that you have joined in. Remember to get in touch with Melanie if you believe that, there's something there that you really might need to help get clear on so that you can move on and instead of just surviving, actually thrive. Remember to go to JanineVosper.com, book in a strategy call, whether it's for you personally, for business, or for within your business. If I can help you, I have got a lot of contacts, and I'm sure so I can find someone that can assist you to thrive in life and thrive in business. Have a great week, a great month, whatever you're up to. Bye-bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.